Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Now the grass is kind of angry at us, though.
Cool beans. Onward, ho. Let's talk to the trees.
Ooh.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Yes, that's true.
And it's not onward, ho. It's westward, ho. Come on, man. Cool beans. I mean, didn't they stop saying that in the 90s or 80s maybe? Who says cool beans anymore?
Cool people. Cool beans is cool beans is still a thing. You can knock those crazy ladies for lots of things, but cool beans is still cool beans with me.
No, that's not true. I need to get that voice. 888-914-9149. This is hour two of the Patrick Madrid Show. Let us pause momentarily for just a matter of supreme importance, and that, of course, is the consecration that is taking place tomorrow. Pope Francis is going to consecrate all of humanity and Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and that'll happen tomorrow. You want to be listening to Relevant Radio. Just glue your ear to the speaker. But in particular, around 11 a.m. Central tomorrow is when the consecration is scheduled to start in Rome. So it'll be about 5 p.m. in Rome, 6 hours ahead. So we're covering that. The live coverage will be on Relevant Radio. You won't miss anything. Pope Francis did encourage everybody, you, if you're at all able to do so, he's encouraging you to go to church, a church near you, a chapel, and pray for peace and participate in the consecration by praying the consecration prayer. If you can get to confession, great. It's not required. I mean, this is not like under pain of sin. This is just a strong encouragement. And if you are able to even just slip in for a few moments and make a visit to the Blessed Sacrament and pray for peace, that would fulfill the spirit of that request. So if you are able to participate, do so tomorrow. And again, as I say, it's going to most likely be starting at about 11 a.m. Central Time. 888-914-9149. We have calls we're going to get to. First, however, I've got some audio I want to play for you. Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, she wears her Catholic faith on her sleeve. And an example of that is an interview that she was doing just yesterday. And was it yesterday or maybe it was the day before? And yet again, she juxtaposes herself as a practicing Catholic with the issue of abortion and her fierce and implacable protection and promotion of killing innocent unborn children in the womb. And here's what she had to say.
Again, it isn't about what is your religious belief. It's what is the right of people to make their own decisions about the sizing and time if they're going to have a family. This really gets me burned up, in case you didn't notice, because, again, I'm very Catholic, devout, practicing, all of that. They would like to throw me out, but I'm not going because I don't want to make their day.
It really burns her up, Patrick.
Well, you know, I keyed in on that, Cyrus, too. I see you did as well. It really burns me up. Well, I mean, I hate to be crass, but sooner or later, Nancy Pelosi, this issue is going to burn you up if you don't repent and believe the gospel. I'm here to tell you. You're my sister in Christ, Nancy. My favorite person on planet Earth, by the way, is named Nancy. Different Nancy, though. But sooner or later, Nancy Pelosi, this issue will burn you up, literally burn you up, if you don't repent and believe the gospel. And the gospel is thou shalt not kill. And that includes, it's especially focused on innocent human life. And life begins at conception. Follow the science. Life begins at conception. And that is an unborn, innocent human life. And by your stoking the flames of support for abortion, you are setting yourself up to literally be burned up, Nancy Pelosi. And I don't say that with any glee whatsoever. The very thought of going to hell or knowing that somebody is going to go to hell is chilling and terrible. And it's the last thing on earth I would want for Nancy Pelosi. So, you know what? Maybe, I don't know. Wouldn't it be interesting if the Pope said, maybe this Pope or some future Pope, we're going to consecrate all of those Catholic in name only politicians who promote abortion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, all around the world, whoever they are. And we're going to consecrate them to the Immaculate Heart of Mary and pray that their hearts will be converted. I wonder what kind of a bombshell result we might get if that were to happen. Who knows? Maybe we'll never know. But so Nancy Pelosi, please, before it's too late, I mean, you're not a young woman anymore. Eternity is far closer to you now than it was, you know, when you were elected. And I don't want to see you get burned up. I really don't. I really, really don't. All right, now let's go to Senator Mike Braun, Republican of Indiana. And he was asked a couple days ago, and all of this is against the backdrop of the Supreme Court nomination hearings that you've been watching, if you've been watching any of it. And yesterday, one of the juicy bits was she was asked if she could define a woman. I think we played Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. She was asked if she could define woman. What is a woman? And she said, well, I'm not a biologist. We played that. The thing that struck me as funny about that is, well, no, but you are a woman. And I mean, if you are a woman, couldn't you like say a few words about what that means? So in any case, here is another question. Actually, this was not a question to her. You know what? Let's do that first. Let's go to the question to her. And then we'll go to Senator Mike Braun, because it was separate, and this is more about him than anything else. In this one, we have Senator John Kennedy, not that John Kennedy, he's long gone, the Senator John Kennedy who's there now, and he's asking Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson a question about equal protection under the law, and she had a... I'll tell you what I think of her answer when we play it.
He just blatantly asked, when does life begin? And
let's hear it. Let's hear it. I don't want to prejudice the listeners. So let's play it. And the male voice that you hear is Senator Kennedy. And then, of course, Judge Brown Jackson is the woman's voice that you're going to hear. Let's play that.
When does life begin, in your opinion?
Senator, I don't know.
Ma'am?
I don't know.
Do you have a belief?
I have personal, religious, and otherwise beliefs that have nothing to do with the law in terms of when life begins.
Do you have a personal belief, though, about when life begins?
I have a religious view.
Religious belief?
That I set aside when I am ruling on cases.
Okay. When does equal protection of the laws attach to a human being?
Well, Senator, I believe that the Supreme Court... I actually don't know the answer to that question. I'm sorry. I don't.
Okay.
Okay. So my reaction to that, and this, I don't know how you feel, Cyrus, I haven't talked to you about this. Number one, I mean, it was kind of refreshing that she didn't try to just bluster her way through this or stonewall or fancy dance or any of the other stuff that you often see in these situations. She just realized, you know, I don't have an answer. I'm just going to say I don't have an answer.
Especially,
so I appreciated
to the law question. To the second question, sure.
She did say to the first one, she said, I don't know. She said, I don't know. But of course, I believe she does know. I think everybody does know. Life begins at conception. But as with the quote that we listened to yesterday on the program, she can't say it, because if she says that life begins at conception, she knows that she's opened herself up now to, you know, withering crossfire on the issue of abortion. Well, if you know that life begins at conception, then how come you're willing to countenance abortion? I mean, it's a no-win situation if she says life begins at conception. And I mean, she's obviously a very intelligent woman. So she realizes too, in this split second thinking about the question, she realizes, and by the way, these questions, she's been prepped for these. They've done ample rehearsals, you know, where different people who are friendly to her are going to portray this senator or that senator and the hostile questions or the leading questions. So it's not as though these are catching her unawares. She's been preparing for these very questions. But you're right. She didn't have an answer to that. I mean, she has an answer to that. It's kind of like, you know, how do you define a woman? Well, I'm not a biologist. True, but you are a woman. I could see Saturday Night Live doing a skit, Cyrus, if they parody the hearings, where every single question that's asked of her of anything, she responds, well, I'm not a biologist, you know.
Well, maybe a long time ago, Saturday Night Live would have made those kinds of jokes, but it's so
they
woke.
Probably
it's
now.
So woke right now that they're afraid to do. They're afraid or they don't want to do jokes like that. But I think we should let's listen to this again. So this first question.
So she's being asked again these questions: when does life begin, and when do equal rights under the law attach to the person? I mean, that's a brilliant question. Equal rights under the law, that gets to the heart of segregation. That gets to the heart of, the fact that there is no difference depending upon your skin color. There is no difference under the law. And that regardless of your skin color, you have equal rights under the law. So that was a really good question. When does that start? When does that attach to a human being? And she said she didn't know. And I'll take her at her word in that case that she didn't know. But it was a bit of a cliffhanger. So let's listen to it again.
When does life begin, in your opinion?
Senator,
You just answer the question.
Why don't you just answer the question?
Be honest.
No big deal.
Yeah, answer it.
Just answer the question, Claire.
Talk to us.
Come on.
Answer the question.
No.
Ma'am?
I don't know.
Do you have a belief?
I don't remember that
part.
It must have gone by too quickly the first time.
It happens.
Because now that you slowed it down, okay.
But those pauses are real. I mean, that's. Hmm. So when does... What's exactly...
Senator...
She said, I don't know.
Yeah.
When does life begin?
So it's a question that we all know. We all have an answer. Whether we agree with each other's answers or not, we're all pretty comfortable answering. Or maybe not comfortable, we all know the answer. Right?
I know when life begins. I know what a woman is. I know when equal rights attach to a human person. I mean, it's interesting, you know, here's something I'll just mention in passing. It is interesting to me how if you're pro-life, these are not difficult questions. I mean, they're easy questions and they're easy to answer without hesitation. If you're pro-abortion, you have to do all these mental gymnastics. You have to do all this calculus and gyrations to try to give an answer that won't undercut all the other things that you have to uphold, whether it's gender ideology or what have you. In this case, it seems to me that the question about when do equal rights under the law attach to the person, I mean, that gets to the issue of race, which is hugely important, the whole idea of racial discrimination. So to now I'm doing what she does. Here we are interviewing this woman, this judge, for the top law position in the country, the top judicial position in the country. And I find it striking that she admits, or at least won't say, what she thinks a woman is, or when does life begin, or when do equal rights attach. And the reason I find it striking, I'll leave it at that, because these are all the kinds of things that the Supreme Court has to deal with. That's the kind of thing they will have to adjudicate on. So do you really want, and I'm not saying just about her per se. She's a radical leftist. There's no hiding that. She's radically pro-abortion. She's radically into many of the things that the left loves. And that's why she's being coy about some of these things. But that's the kind of thing that these judges, these justices, are going to be called upon to adjudicate. So I would argue it's disingenuous on the one hand to say, I don't know how to define a woman because I'm not a biologist. No, but you are a woman. But on the other hand, I must admit that I am at least grateful that she, in some of those places, just said, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm not going to try to wing it. I think deep down she does know. But there again, she can't really say it for the reasons that I just mentioned. So now we have a third audio. Why don't we play that? This is different. So here we have, let me get back to that one. This is Senator Mike Braun. He's a Republican. He's from Indiana. And he really stepped in it, but it's hard to know. And he claims later, because he did a clarification, he claims that his statement was that he misunderstood the question. He thought the question was asking about one thing. In fact, it was asking about something else. Now, that may or may not be true. I don't know how plausible you think his explanation is, but let's listen to this. He's being asked by a reporter, you would be okay with the Supreme Court leaving the issue of interracial marriage to the states? That's the question that he was asked, and let's listen.
So you would be okay with the Supreme Court leaving the question of interracial marriage to the states?
Yes, I think that that's something that if you're not wanting the Supreme Court to weigh in on issues like that, you're not going to be able to have your cake and eat it too. I think that's hypocritical.
What about Griswold versus Connecticut?
Well, you can list a whole host of issues. When it comes down to whatever they are, I'm going to say that they're not going to all make you happy within a given state, but that we're better off having states manifest their points of view rather than homogenizing it across the country as Roe versus Wade did.
Okay. What's at stake here and what has people jumping up and down is, as you notice, the reporter says, what about the issue of interracial marriage? Now, as I understand Senator Braun's clarification, once he realized the firestorm that he set off by this, he said, I thought it was referring to same-sex marriage. And, okay, maybe. But this is indicative of, or at least it could be indicative, of that kind of subtle unwillingness. And I don't know anything about him. I don't know, certainly don't know him. I don't know anything about him other than the bits that I've seen on the news recently. But obviously, everyone has a right to get married, and it doesn't matter what the skin color is or the racial background is of the person that you want to marry. Race shouldn't matter at all. And can you imagine, Cyrus, living in a country in which it was illegal in one state to have an interracial marriage and legal in another state? I mean, it's already bad enough with abortion. But if the states were to say, in this state, black people and white people can't get married. Just can't. Illegal.
It's ridiculous.
Now, it is ridiculous. And of course, the Supreme Court has, you know, made that kind of thing nigh impossible as far as the law is concerned. Now, there is a parallel in other areas. So, like, what about abortion, for example? Well, there's nothing wrong with one person of one race marrying another person of another race. There's nothing wrong. It's morally neutral. In fact, one could argue it actually is beneficial overall because it could be strengthening the gene pool and, you know, getting, we can be more assimilated. There are a lot of maybe some pros that people could promote on that. But the main thing is if you love that person, you should be able to marry that person. But that then gets into the question of, well, what about same-sex marriage? You know, if interracial marriage is certainly fine and there's no problem with it, what about same-sex marriage? It's interesting how these things like are like dominoes. And how, even though they're not the same thing, sometimes these parallels can create problems. So people are saying that he is sort of like a closet racist because he doesn't think that interracial marriage is something that should be the law of the land, but it should be decided in one state or the other, however they wish. And I would like to think that his clarification is correct and that he just misspoke or misheard the question. That happens. I hope so, because if he really did mean that, that would, to my mind at least, be, it would be racist. And as you've heard me say a million times, racism is wrong no matter who's perpetrating it. Now, if that is racism, that's what I would say. If it's not, if it was just a simple mistake, fair enough. Let's see. I think we should take a break and then we'll dive right back into the phone calls. Keep in mind that everything we talk about. Oh, I see what you're doing, Cyrus. I get it. I get it. Yeah. Three-dimensional chess here on the Patrick Madrid Show. If you listen closely, you'll pick up on all sorts of little Easter eggs on this program, like this one right now. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Thanks for listening. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Let's get over to Rosalie now in St. Louis. Hi, Rosalie.
Hi. First of all, I just discovered Relevant Radio recently, and I listen to it in the car all the time, and I really like it. I especially like your show. And what
Thank
I'm calling
you.
About is just an observation. I heard this morning on Relevant Radio that the Pope has issued a letter requesting that all the parishes in the world assemble the people in their churches to pray this consecration together tomorrow. And it just seems to me that we've known this well over a week that this was going to happen, because people have to make changes in their schedule and all that in order to, you know, comply with this request. And he doesn't ask this of us very much. And I know I've been praying for the Ukraine ever since this happened, and even shortly before. But it just, I just feel a little let down that it was like an afterthought. Oh, well, let's see if we can get the people in the churches to say it together. So that's my observation.
Okay. Well, fair enough. I don't share that view only because sometimes an afterthought, even though it is an afterthought, it's still a good thought. I mean, isn't it a good thing,
that's
though,
true.
That people would go to church? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, just for what it's worth, Rosalie, and I realize all of us were struck differently by different things, and that happens. So my thought is, you know, rather than the glass half empty, if the glass is half full, it's a good thing, it seems to me, that people are going to go to church and pray for peace. Couldn't hurt, right? I mean, if anything, it's going to help. So even if it were an afterthought.
Right, if they can get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they can get there. And that's the nature of the request as I read it, is that he's saying, if you can, go to church and pray. And especially if you can do it between, you know, here in the U.S., say between 11 and 1 Central. But it's not an order. It's not a requirement. You're not going to sin if you don't do it. But it's an encouragement.
No, I understand that.
As
I said, it just seems that it would have been helpful, because how is this message being disseminated? I mean, I heard it through Relevant Radio. Is this going to be on the world news? I guess I doubt it. How is it getting around that this is his request?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the first phase of it, as I understand it, Rosalie, was that the Pope had sent to all the bishops, I mean, he had his people do it, sent to all the bishops of the world a letter saying that he was going to make this consecration on this day at this time, and asked them to unite with him wherever they are in the world and pray the same consecration. And this, of course, is in keeping with what Our Lady asked when she talked about this to Sister Lucia in Fatima. So he first, as I understand it, told all the bishops, and then, of course, the news services picked that up, so that became known, at least in the Catholic world. And that was followed up a few days later with the text of the prayer, which I'm sure was composed in that ensuing few days. And then the text was disseminated. I read the text of the prayer on the program yesterday or the day before. So it made its way out there. And then, of course, here on Relevant Radio, we're trying to rally everybody to, at the very least, to pray the prayer of consecration. And you can do that by tuning in here at Relevant Radio. It's probably going to be starting at about 11 a.m. Central. So about 11 a.m. your time tomorrow is when you can expect. And what we'll do is we will be playing the feed from Rome. So you'll actually hear what is happening in Rome. So we're going to carry that all over the world, you know, with our global reach for Relevant Radio. So pretty cool.
Oh, that's great. Yes, for sure. Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome, Rosalie. Nice to talk to you and give our regards to St. Louis. We have lots of listeners there. And yes, Father Rocky and Drew will be on the air offering commentary during. They won't be interrupting anything or talking over anything, but when it's appropriate, they will offer some commentary about this momentous and, I would argue, prophetic event in the life of the church. How often does this happen? Never. Let's see, Uriel in Sacramento. Good morning, Uriel.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. I am a loan officer in the mortgage industry, and I have some clients who are Catholic and are going to be selling their house. However, they're being advised by their real estate agent to remove religious statues and images. So I guess depersonalizing their home to broaden just the views for getting more potential buyers. Is this just, what are your thoughts on this? Because she's a devout Catholic and it's not sitting well with her. So just wanted to pass it on to you.
Yes. Well, on the one hand, in Romans 1:16, St. Paul says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God for salvation to everyone who has faith, to the Jew first and then to the Greek." So on the one hand, we should be unashamed of the gospel, which means that, you know, we wouldn't take down a crucifix just because it might offend somebody. I remember being irked when, I believe it was Georgetown, if I'm not mistaken. Georgetown had some conference that involved Muslims attending for whatever conference. And so they had all of the crucifixes throughout the school, or at least in the area where this would be held. I forget now whether they had them removed or they had them covered up, because they didn't want to offend these non-Catholic people. And I was really irked by that, because talk about being ashamed of the gospel. I mean, there's the gospel in art form. And if you're so ashamed or so worried about somebody being offended that you cover up the crucifix or you remove it, I mean, that's terrible if you ask me. Now, what you're describing is not that, but I can see why she would be unhappy. And I would feel the same way. Like, this is my belief. Now, I recognize that not everybody believes what I do. But if you don't want to buy if you don't want to buy my house just because I believe in Jesus, well, then go buy another house, as far as I'm concerned. You know, maybe I don't want you to buy my house if you disdain Jesus Christ, and I would probably rather that you not be living in my house. I think I would probably fall on that side of the fence. Now, there are those who would say, yeah, but this is not a religious issue. You're not doing this for a religious purpose. This is strictly business. And it's true that there are people, if they see religious imagery, they might back away. For me personally, I would say, fine, back away. I don't care. We'll find another buyer, especially in this market. I mean, come on. It's so easy to sell a house right now. probably, which is great for you because it's great for business. But, you know, another dimension of this, too, would be if I were a potential house buyer and I saw in the pictures in the MLS listing, I saw a crucifix on the wall, I'd be more interested in that house, you know, because I'd say, here's a place where Jesus Christ is honored. I want to look at that house. I want to see that house. So it may actually be good for her in that sense. But I just keep coming back to Romans, where he says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. You know, I wouldn't want to, I mean, what do you say to Jesus in your heart as you're taking the crucifix down off the wall because you don't want someone to see it? How do you explain that to Jesus? I'm sorry, Jesus.
Could you just provoke debate? Let's say realtor's response is something along the lines of, you're not going to get the highest, best offer unless those images or statues are removed. And maybe, let's say, the owner can not so much remove them, but I guess they're already packing, quote unquote, they could be packing. So they're kind of removing them. Does that make sense?
What do you mean by pack, or can you re-explain that? You mean like packing them up with your other stuff?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Well, that to me seems like, you know, it's a rationale for it. And it's not an unreasonable rationale, but really, to my mind, this is more a matter of, well, like Jesus said in Matthew 10, he says, whoever acknowledges me before men, I will acknowledge before my Father in heaven, but whoever denies me before men, I will deny before my Father who is in heaven. So I'm not invoking this passage to say that if you take the crucifix down off the wall to take a real estate picture, that Jesus is going to deny you before the Father. I'm not saying that, but I think this kind of heads in that direction, doesn't it? I mean, if we're that shallow, that we're that worried that somebody might not spend the extra $5,000 or something because an image of Jesus is on the wall, I wouldn't take it down if it were me. I might stick two crucifixes on the wall. Just for good measure.
Agreed. Yeah.
Put an image of Our Lady in there.
What should a profit a man if he shall gain the whole world but lose his soul? Totally agree. Absolutely. And the audio you played for Nancy Pelosi, where she said that she's devout Catholic and she's religious, and then the other audio for the judge. It's always interesting when they say they bring up their religious beliefs, but that it won't get in the way of their decisions. But I mean, if the religion is just man's response to God, that's our character. Our foundation is almost built with our religion. So it's always interesting when they say that, but I appreciate your response.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your consideration of my response. Thank you for that. Yeah. So the verses in question I mentioned a moment ago. So the one that I just quoted is in Matthew chapter 10, verse 32 and 33. So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father who is in heaven. And that right there, by the way, don't forget, that gets to the question of apostasy. It's not a topic we talk about much on this program. Not for any particular reason. It just doesn't seem to come up, but let's just talk about it for a minute here. We have to take a break in a second, but remember that if you leave the Catholic Church and become, let's say, Muslim or Jewish, or for that matter, you may just become atheist and deny the existence of God, that is a terrible sin of apostasy. And in the case of, let's say, embracing Judaism or Islam, to use two examples, it involves an explicit denial of Jesus Christ. An explicit denial, a rejection, a repudiation of Jesus as Lord and Messiah, as Jesus as God, the Son of God. So if ever you're tempted in that direction, by the way, call me first because I'll help you get your mind right before you make that bad decision. But just be aware that this is what Jesus is talking about here in Matthew 10. If you acknowledge him before men, he will acknowledge you before the Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, he says, I will deny before my Father who is in heaven. So an explicit rejection of Jesus, that's a one-way ticket to the hot place. H-E double hockey sticks. That's a one-way ticket. Now, you can repent before you die, but some people, you know, they don't have that opportunity. And it's a foolish gamble to assume that you will. So, you know, these are high stakes, and Jesus is really specific about it. So let's take a break, and we'll come back with more of your phone calls. Let me look at the lines here. Yeah, we got one line open. That's it. So if you want to grab it, call now, 888-914-9149. I will be right back.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com. Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
Let's go to Mike now in Katy, Texas. Mike, thank you for calling. Welcome.
Hi, yes, thank you, Patrick. First, I just want to say I really enjoy your show, and as a revert back to the Catholic faith, you've been very instrumental in my learning about the faith. But last week,
thanks be to God.
A lot of the conversation. Yes, thank you. And thanks be to God. Last week, the conversation a lot centered around the use of nuclear weapons in World War II. And while I understand your biblical references, I never thought the conversation fully was thought through. And by that, I mean, if you were in the White House and you were faced with that decision to send in troops into a country that had attacked the United States, what would you have done? Because while I understand the direction the Lord is giving us through His Word and agree with you, what does one do? What does one nation do in that situation? And the only way to get there is to put yourself into that president's seat to make that decision.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for what it's worth, Mike, I have thought deeply about this issue for years. It's not as though I just came to the topic unprepared or without ever giving it any thought. And I have tried to imagine if I were, you know, FDR dies suddenly of a stroke and, you know, I'm Harry Truman. What do I do? So like now I become aware of the Manhattan Project. You know that Harry Truman wasn't aware of it. He didn't know that we had the atomic bomb. He didn't, the Manhattan Project was so closely guarded as a secret that even the vice president himself didn't really know what he came to know when he became president. So he was faced with a very terrible decision. And I don't, I mean, I don't second guess the fact that he probably also agonized over this issue. But then again, too, we didn't know because we hadn't ever done this before. We only knew theoretically the damage that it would cause. And only afterward was it really apparent just how devastating these atomic bombs were. But what would I have done? I've thought about that before. I wouldn't have dropped the atomic bomb on a civilian population center like Hiroshima or Nagasaki. I would have, for example, considered, and I said this in the, you know, in the last week, I guess, when we were talking about it, one idea that had come to my mind is I would have dropped it in the middle of Tokyo Bay. I would have said to the emperor and the imperial government and all the generals, hey, check it out, guys. You know, on such and such a day, at such and such a time, we want you to be looking toward Tokyo Harbor because we've got a surprise for you, and then drop it right in the middle of Tokyo Bay. And I've actually studied the map. It's about a dozen miles across, maybe 15 miles across at the narrowest point. So if they were to have dropped this bomb in the center, it would not have destroyed any buildings or killed any people. And they would have seen the horrendous power of this bomb. And, you know, that, and then just say, you know, if you don't want these destroying and obliterating your Navy and your Army, because that's next, we will do that next. That could have gotten their attention. You could have done tremendous psychological damage to the Japanese government, the Japanese people, if it had been dropped, let's say, detonated on top of Mount Fuji. You know, fly a bomber above Mount Fuji and detonate it, and let people see what it would do. It wouldn't have killed anybody, but it would have shown the awesome destructive power of this bomb. So my point is, Mike, it could have been done. It could have been demonstrated, and they could have seen it's futile to resist this, and they could have done it without destroying all that innocent human life. And that's what I would have done if I had to do it. I would have done it that way.
But there were also islands where it was futile to continue to fight, and the Japanese continued to fight through starvation and until they mm-hmm. fought to the last person was killed.
And that's true.
And the belief was there was no giving up by the Japanese. And so say we dropped a bomb in Tokyo Bay and they continue to fight. I get to the end, through the end point, that if the decision is sending in troops or bombing their cities, and where do you go at that point?
Well, I mean, there's a difference between dropping an atomic bomb on a city and going in with troops and fighting against enemy combatants. So obviously, to save life, to save American lives, not to mention Japanese lives, I mean, if we could have avoided a land invasion, that would have been great. The question is, what can you do to get their attention, to break their will to keep fighting? And, you know, the option that was chosen, it was immoral, in my view. So there were other options that could have been chosen that would not have been immoral. And I guess for me, that's what I'm saying, is that's where I would draw the line. If I were President Truman in 1945 and I had the ability to drop this bomb someplace, I would not have dropped it on a population center. I would have found something else. And if that didn't get their attention, then okay, let's go find a military installation. Let's go find one of those islands in the Pacific where their Navy is and obliterate that, because that would not have been immoral. Those were enemy combatants. Could have done that morally. So, and then you go to the next option.
Correct. Right. What point does the citizens of a country, if they are building the rifles and the bombs for their military, do they become a combatant even though they don't wear a uniform? Does that ever happen? Do you ever reach that point? Mm-hmm.
Well, let's look at Ukraine as an example. So you have everyday Ukrainian citizens, men and women, who are not in the military, and they've picked up guns to fight against the Russians. So they are now enemy combatants. But they have a moral high ground because they're the ones under attack from the Russians. So they enjoy a kind of special status that they are civilians, but they're also fighting to defend their homes and defend their own lives against an unjust aggressor. So in a case like that, if your cause is moral, your cause is righteous, and you are technically an enemy combatant, even though you're not in the military, but you've got a gun or you're making bombs or something like that, you are an enemy combatant, but that's not what was going on in the case of Japan, because it was Japan that started this war against the United States with Pearl Harbor, of course, and all the things that went into it. And from my study, I'm not an expert on this matter, but I've read quite a bit about it, and I've made 3 trips to Hiroshima to understand better. It doesn't qualify me as an expert, but it's pretty clear to me that most of those people were either in it, they were not in any way engaged in the direct manufacturing of munitions and other things. Like the school children, for example, or the elderly people or the housewives, they were not doing that. And many of them who were doing it were not doing it because they wanted to do it. They were doing it because they were forced to do it. And that, too, would mean that they were not, you know, they were not actively fighting against the United States. But see, these are all fine details that in no way really change the bottom line issue, which is, you can never do something immoral to achieve a good goal.
Right.
And it certainly was a good goal to stop the war. Yeah. Go ahead.
And Patrick, I do appreciate you taking opposing views, and I think you do a very good job in bringing that out, and you're very fair. And
Thank you.
I appreciate your show and what you do on your program.
Thank you, and have a blessed day.
Thank you. Very kind of you. Do you hear that, Cyrus? Listening to Relevant Radio helped Mike come back to the Catholic Church. Isn't that awesome?
I love it.
Love that. Yeah. Let's go now to, let's go to Faith in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Hi, Faith. Welcome.
Hello. I just wanted to say that that lady made a comment about it was John 9:4, I believe, where Jesus said, I must work the works of God while it is day, for night is coming when no man can work.
Right. You're right. And yeah, that is John 9:4. We must work the works of him who sent me. Let me read it, though, if I may, just so people know what you're referring to. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night comes when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. That's the one. You found it for me. Thank you.
No problem. So was he talking about like healing and those are the works of God and speaking the words of God? And that was that kind of work, not the other kind of work, not physical work. So
yeah,
when nighttime comes, it's like he's saying, like, when I die, that's nighttime. Like, that's when you're going to be persecuted or something like that.
Well, for you and for me, yeah, that's true. And, of course, Jesus would rise from the dead on the third day. But in context, you notice that what he did just before that was he healed a man who was blind from birth. And so the context seems to me that the works that Jesus is doing or that he's referring to are these works of healing, forgiveness, reconciliation, teaching the people the truth, drawing them to God. And, you know, as he says, I am the light of the world, and we must do these works of him who sent me while it is day. When night comes, no one can work. I think that was an allusion to when Jesus dies, first of all, on the cross, and then also when he leaves this world and he's no longer present on the face of the earth in a physical way, then that could be understood as night as well. But his time for working these works was limited, and it would end at a certain point. Those are my thoughts on that passage. What do you think, Faith?
Oh, I didn't know you said it. Yes, I think you're right. Also, I have one more question, and maybe I didn't catch it before when you were talking because I'm at work right now. Sorry. Do you think it's immoral to be a soldier and do your duty, you know, as a soldier? Do you think that's immoral to do that, to kill, because that's your kind of like your job or something?
Well, if you're a soldier and you're fighting enemy combatants and they're shooting at you or trying to, you know, kill you, you have a moral, it is not immoral for you to fight back and kill them. And this is the church's teaching on legitimate self-defense. It has to be proportional. It also has to be against somebody who's unjustly aggressing you with the intent to kill you. You have a right to defend yourself, even if it means using lethal force. So that would apply to police. It would apply to the military. Now, to use an example I brought up on the show the other day, let's say that the enemy combatant throws down his weapon, raises his hands, and surrenders. Well, it's the same guy that you were trying to kill 5 minutes ago, and if you killed him 5 minutes ago while he was shooting at you, you would not have done anything immoral. However, if he's surrendering and he's approaching you without the intention to harm you, he's just surrendering, and then you shoot him, well, that, of course, would be murder. So the circumstances, they change the morality of the act, as do the act itself and your intention. But in that case, the circumstances mean everything. So we have to look at it that way as well. Great questions, Faith. I'm really glad you called today. Thank you. We're going to start hour three in just a second. So those of you who have been trying to get through, if you've been getting a busy signal, just keep hitting redial. We're going to get to you ASAP. When this quick timeout is done, we'll be coming straight back to you. The number to dial, 888-914-9149. If you want to send me a message on Twitter, my address there is at Patrick Madrid. Shout out to Team Taco, all of our Team Taco listeners. Good to see you out there in Twitter land. And if you'd like to send me an email, just go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on connect, and then you can send me an email, and I'll be on the lookout for it. I'll be right back.